Are you ready for the Low Blows Network? Every Wednesday on the Low Blows Network, the Low Blows team are at hand to break down, analyze, and make fun of all things pro wrestling. Hosted by former pro wrestler Rick Nash.
I think the only reasonable thing we can do now is turn John Cena heel.
Selfie with me fucking dog.
Banned from Nigeria. I will be talking to the government tomorrow morning.
YouTube star Corporate King.
This elephant has four legs. Joe Ross has four legs. Joseph Stalin, if he had two more legs.
Bonesaw rips off his shirt, yeah? And it says, Chuck your law. Big dirty toy for him.
And the queen of Irish wrestling, Katie Harvey.
I want one to sign. Just CM
I'm
Punk.
I'm so embarrassed. CM Punk.
It's Low Blows. Bravo!
Congratulations to Paul O'Donovan and Fintan McCarthy, who won Ireland's first ever rowing gold medal last week in Tokyo. They romped home in the men's lightweight double skirls rowing. What I loved about this as well was, I don't know if you saw the interview that they did afterwards where it's like, how does it feel to be the first? And then I think it was Paul O'Donovan got very like existential, and he's like, the only reason we're first is because time is we're very early into the concept of time. In a million years, I doubt we'll be the first and this won't be that special. So really, it's not special because I'm only getting rewarded for when I happen to be born, which I have no control over. And it's like,
did you see what you said in an interview before the gold medal? Where she was like, so what do you have to say to all the fans at home? Everybody watching at home, and he's like, go to bed. Don't watch us Muppets. Like, there'll be a repeat in the morning. And she was like, no, don't say that. We're showing it live.
Amazing stuff. This gold medal, and obviously this huge massive achievement, came despite both men awkwardly having brothers, Gary and Jake respectively, who they previously rowed with, and obviously they found someone that's better than their brothers. But as we get kicked off here, on another edition of Low Blows, Rick Nash, Corbin Keane, and Katie Harvey in the house as always. Guys, who in wrestling was better off after they ditched a family member or members?
I can't believe I struggled with this answer, right? Because this question gives me the perfect opportunity to talk about Harlem Heat. Harlem Heat, Booker T, and Stevie Ray at their absolute peak in WCW, 10-time tag team champions, like absolutely class. Obviously, Booker T slightly more class because of, you know, how history unfolded. But like, they were a really good tag team and they had a really good feud when they split, but then like Booker T just skyrocketed. Like when WCW folded, like he was the world champion. He was one of the big stars who went to WWE, like, and he's one of the few that made a proper impact, I think, and like has a proper WWE legacy as well as a WCW legacy. But like we still have love and respect for Stevie Ray, you know, we do.
Not that I don't respect him, like, but like, you know,
I just feel like this question can, like, it mean to one member of the family.
There's no nice way of putting it.
Like, who said we're a podcast of niceness?
No one told me this. I based my reputation on being nice and lovely.
Although it was very wholesome, like, you haven't seen joy until you see the face on Katie Harvey when she realizes she gets to talk about Harlem Heat.
They were class though, like, I've been watching a lot of old WCW and like they really were class.
Okay, fair enough. Well, there you go, you managed to answer it nicely. Corporate Keane, you're not a nice person, so go for it.
Right, I'll just be honest. Like, I feel that when Raven Creed split from Consequences, I thought she really found herself, and I just saw Raven Creed and TNT there beating the shit out of Sammy Jane, Emerson Jane, and you know, like, I don't know, I just think like Consequences Creed, obviously he did end up joining the New Day and all that sort of stuff later on down the line, change his name and all that, but I don't know, I just feel like they're better off like apart, you know, on their own separate journeys.
Moved out of her home as well, and obviously Raven, her dad, famously, like, you know, so she's ditched some multiple family members that she happened to be related to, first and second name. And well done, no, congratulations to her, fair play. Guys, this week was actually busier outside and inside the ring with Bray freaking Wyatt leaving the WWE, as well as other comings and goings. Like, it seems like it's just transfer deadline. It literally is transfer deadline season, but WWE are now taking part. Jim White's going to be involved in all. Domino's Pizza were involved in the scandal, and Nick fucking Gage was on Dynamite. We're going to be discussing it all as things go on, but first, let's get kicked off with it. With it being busier outside than inside the ring, there's no better way to get it kicked off with the news for the week, because, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for
Queen versus King.
Queen versus King, because my two co-hosts are good friends, but they're even better enemies. So what we do every week to discuss the biggest news of the week is we put the top 5 stories on the board, we put 30 seconds on the clock, and we award points for punditry for their lightning hot takes on the biggest stories of the week. We've been keeping score since the year went on. Katie, like, raced out into the lead a few weeks ago. Corporate King pulled it back to 12-all, and Katie reasserted her dominance to go ahead 13-12, but it is very, very tight at the top with still a few months left to go. So, Keen, you're up first this week. Top 5 stories on the clock. First, there's no other place we can start. And we're going to go a bit long on this, but first I want to kind of, we'll get your hot takes and we'll get the points out of the way before we have a chat about it. Because Wednesday came early this week, as on Saturday, WWE announced the shock release of Bray Wyatt. And like I said, we'll chat more in depth about this shortly, but for now, for points, is this a decision that will come to regret, or had Bray run his course in WWE?
WWE have absolutely fucked it. If AEW can get the cool, very briefly babyface Bray Wyatt that teamed with Roman Reigns against the League of Nations, the one that like did the sort of gun point symbol, and then as he speared, if they can get that, then WWE have absolutely fucked it. Don't bother showing up for Raw this Monday. It's done, it's dead, it's finished, it's over. You have fucked it. WWE are pretty much out of business now. It's gone, it's over. Goodbye.
Okay, strong hot take. WWE are going out of business as a result of this. Katie Harvey, your thoughts?
The complete opposite. I actually think WWE have made the right decision here. Ooh. Right? But hear me out. This is one of them rare circumstances where WWE have made the right decision for them, but it's actually going to be better for Bray Wyatt as well. WWE have nothing to gain by keeping Bray Wyatt because they don't know how to use him. You know, they've always started really, really strong and then faltered at the finish line with all his storylines. And the longer they keep Bray Wyatt, the more they're going to devalue themselves and Bray Wyatt, because what they were doing with him was so shit.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, that was shite. That was shite. Give me the point there.
I was sure you were going to go for the theme as an entity. I'm sure, like, you know, you're nearly there to find out. Katie, I think, made the more interesting point. I'm going to give the point to you. Well, let's discuss this a little bit, because this was absolutely shocking. So let's kind of get our all. We could flesh it out here. We're not playing for points now. Your thoughts on this, like again, do we kind of sign off on that where it's like they just didn't know how to use them? It's a huge missed opportunity, though. Like, this is the kind of thing, when you think of, like, WCW let, like, this stunning Steve Austin go, someone that was doing nothing for them, and people were probably like, yeah, whatever, he's got a bit of talent, but he's not a star. This is bigger than that, you know what I mean? Like, and that swung the Monday Night Wars. Like, is this, like, do we think that this genuinely could be something? A lot of people are saying that AEW don't really want to see Bray Wyatt.
This is an AEW signing. Like, Adam Cole, Bray Wyatt, those sort of, like, the people who I think shouldn't go to AEW are the people of, like, Buddy Murphy, for example, who's, like, incredibly talented, but doesn't have the star power and should use somewhere like Impact to build himself up.
Yeah.
Or Ric Flair, you know, somebody who's, like, you know, old, and I know a lot of people say, like, oh, but, you know, like, he could be a manager or whatever, but I just don't think it'd be a massive, massive signing that I don't really think needs to happen in the case of Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. But I think Bray Wyatt, I honestly believe he has so much to offer, you know what I mean? Like, I look at, like, he'd be in the sort of Malakai Black kind of tier, you know what I mean? The sort of people that I think they should be bringing in, you know, CM Punk, Daniel Bryan, like, I put him up there in terms of, like, a start, like, yeah, like, in terms of his name and in terms of what he can bring, there's so many ways you can go about it as well. Like, I don't think they don't need to do the Fiend shit. That's you know, you can leave that in WWE. But you can go kind of, who knows? This is the thing, you don't know what Bray Wyatt's gonna do. It's impossible to predict, but he could easily end up being, you know, like you remember Bray Wyatt when he was kind of the cult leader? Yeah. I thought that was like arguably the best Bray Wyatt. I'm just saying, Braun, Eric, Bray, they're all free agents. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? You know, like there's so many different directions you can go in. Like I don't actually. For me, I'm excited. Like when the people that I get sad for when they get let go of WWE are people like you know, Wesley Blake or Tucker, yeah, or people like that. You know what I mean? Because I'm like, there's no real kind of, oh, can't wait to see them here, can't wait to see them there. They didn't get a fair chance, etc., etc. Whereas like with people like this, I mean, this is excellent. Like, if you're a wrestling fan, this is the sort of shit you want to hear. Because it's like, man, now he gets to go to like AEW or anywhere else, and we'll see what's happening. It's really exciting. Also, I was gonna say, I felt bad for Ever Rise, but did you see who's heading to AEW tomorrow night?
No, really?
And they called out Ever Rise and a lad, Daniel Garcia. He's a big name on the indies. They called out Eddie Kingston, John Moxley, and fucking, who was the other one? They called it like the three baddest men in AEW, and they're like, let's go. I'm like, that's unrelated. But yeah, just I mean, yeah, I think Bray Wyatt would be a good fit in AEW. It'd be fun.
Do you think this could be a game changer, or would you put him in AEW, Katie?
I would put him in AEW, because I think they're the kind of people who'll let him have the creative control that he needs to do his own thing, like, and I think they will have learned enough lessons from WWE on how not to use him as well. Mm. You know, like they do well with, say, like Matt Hardy was slightly invigorated there when he first came to AEW, because he had creative control, he was doing his own thing, you know, and there wasn't like built to a WrestleMania match, you know what I mean? Like that's the important thing, like is once they don't use him as like a wrestler, like he can still wrestle, but like don't build everything around these big matches, because that's not where his strengths lie, you know? And like, I seen someone saying like, what if he takes over the Dark Order? And I was like, imagine if he just never wrestled again and he was just like literally the puppet master for the Dark Order. Like, I would be so into that. Like, there's just so many more possibilities, and AEW is just, it seems like more the land of freedom for this kind of thing.
Mm. And I just think that, like, you know, when you look at like some of the shit that they've done with Bray Wyatt, like, you know, the red light matches, and like, you know, like his last match was fucking shite. Like, you know, the Randy Orton on WrestleMania. Yes. Like, yeah, I'm not saying AEW is perfect. Obviously, like, you know what I mean, they make mistakes as well. Yeah. But I just feel like the really stupid things, like the really, like, what was your thought process behind that type of stuff? You know what I mean? I don't see it happen at AEW. You know what I mean? Because it might, like, they might, who knows? Like, we'll wait and see. I mean, but I'd be optimistic about him going to AEW.
Yeah, they're more kind of based in reality as well. There's less of the spooky shit. Do you know what I mean? WWE love the spooky shit. Whereas I think if you're a grown adult wrestling fan, you're like, that shit is not me anymore. Like, do you know what I mean? So we like, who knows? Maybe kids love it. Like, we liked it. I don't know. When I was younger, I liked The Undertaker and Kane and that kind of stuff. So maybe kids see it the same. But we see it, we're like, that is shocking.
I think AEW's strength is going to be they're going to have better people to play off Bray Wyatt as well than WWE. Randy Orton is not the right person for Bray Wyatt to play off, but if you imagine like him trying to do that spooky shit to Chris Jericho, you know what I mean? Like, think of the promos, Sammy Guevara, you know, like these kind of more like tongue-in-cheek, can be very funny, can be ridiculous type of things. Like, they've just a better balance of people, I think, that will bring out the best in them, rather than like, we're going to do a Randy Orton feud, you know? And I love Randy Orton saying that.
And he constantly came back. Like, if you were to pair Bray Wyatt with one like rival in WWE that he had, it was Randy Orton, just like through like two WrestleMania matches against him and stuff like that. But yeah, no, I agree, it was always an awkward fit. That fantasy book then, like, I'd love to see him in the Dark Order. Like, I start to think about, like, imagine him in the Dark Order, imagine, like, you know, Hangman finally gets his title shot, and then they're gonna do it, and then, like, fucking Bray Wyatt appears in the black, and then, like, he takes over the Dark Order, and then you've got Hangman against Bray, and that kind of stuff. You can bring in your, then it makes sense for him to bring in your Braun, bring in your Eric Rowan, do you know what I mean?
Like,
he's already got a -1 there. Do you know what I mean? So there's already a connection and stuff like that there, like, so it's exciting.
There's ways, yeah. I don't know how it'll be about the Dark Order. I kind of, like, I do get the appeal of it, but like, part of me, it kind of reminds me a bit of, like, remember when Eric Rowan showed up and they're like, oh, he's a new leader of the Dark Order. Like, no, that's Brody's thing, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I do get it, but also as well, like, when you consider, like, a lot of, like, you know, what he'd like to do. I remember, like, we were having a chat in the kind of the Big Low Balls group chat we have, and it was like, we're talking about how, like, he's obviously, there's a lot of talk about how he suffered mental health issues. Now, that wasn't related. There was the discussion around whether it was to do with that, and it was more a mutual thing. He was planning to come back in August, and WWE gave him the line that, you know, it's budget cuts, as they're telling everyone. But, like, you know, so there's elements of that where, you know, it'd be a tribute to Luke Harper and that's his best friend and stuff like that. So I don't know, there's a lot going on there. One other thing I want to kind of bring up is Ronda Rousey. Okay, let's talk about her tweet. Have we all seen it?
No.
Yeah.
Okay, you haven't seen Ronda Rousey's tweet?
I saw like a tweet, but I think I just scrolled past it. I don't really remember it.
Okay, so this went everywhere last night. Hold on, I'll get it up specifically.
But before you get it, do you think that like they'll bring in... Like, the other way, obviously, we talk about how the Fiend is actually an entity. Do you think they'll have, like, like Otis come back as the Fiend? Or someone like that, where it's just the Fiend. Like, it's not the Fiend Bray Wyatt, it's just the Fiend. And it's, like, Otis or someone random like that, you know what I mean?
The Fiend may be an entity. I think it could be happening.
It could be, like, Suicide in
yeah.
TNA. Like, the other way, they pass the mask around, like, to whoever.
Yeah. Like, well, they already have with Alexa, do you know what I mean? Ronda Rousey last night said, I've seen you saying fans... chanting "We want Wyatt" last night, chanting "We want Beach Ball" over Bray Wyatt performing. If the WWE treated him like he was expendable, it was because you ungrateful idiots did first. It's a contentious point, and it's split people down the middle. Katie, you've had a bit more time to process it, haven't seen it. What are your thoughts on that kind of level of thought? You know, we don't have to. A lot of people are making it very personal about Ronda. I saw some really abusive tweets towards Ronda last night, and I'm like. Okay, well, she did call everyone idiots, so there's that. But, like, let's not make it personal about Ronda. What are your thoughts on that line of thinking where the fans kind of let him down? And, like, to kind of play devil's advocate here for Ronda a bit, and I've got other... this. I'm not saying this is my stance, but people that agreed with this stance, Bray Wyatt, he's put out social media posts before saying the fans have attacked his mental health and damaged him and this and that and so on with their attacks of him. So there was concerted attacks. Like, we're acting like Bray Wyatt has always been cool with fans. 2 weeks ago, I don't think Bray Wyatt was cool. You know, and now he's cool. So what are your thoughts on Ronda Rousey's tweets? Do you think the fans kind of let Bray down or...?
All I could think was, I understand this tweet as a hormonal pregnant lady. I understand that she probably tweeted that and then forgot all about it 2 seconds later. That's how your brain operates. You get very heated about small things, you get very angry very quickly, and then like you eat something and you're grand. So that is literally all the thought I gave to this.
amazing take. I love it. I just, no one's ever talked about that, so really original angle. Corbin King, your own thoughts on that?
The fans only shout on it when it got bad, though. You know what I mean? Like, the fans aren't going to sit here and cheer on, like, a fucking shite match. You know what I mean? Like, this is why I'm delighted he's going. I think it's going to be great. Like, I don't consider this bad news at all. Like, shocking. It is shocking, definitely, because he is a massive name. But, like, I don't know. I don't really care. Like, I know a lot of people are getting, like, angry over that tweet or whatever. I just don't care. Like, I'm in the kind of the Katie stance, was like, whatever, like.
I see it. Like, there was a time when, like, Bray Wyatt arguably wasn't doing shit stuff, like, where people were shitting on him, like, the start of the Firefly Funhouse and things. And there was a lot of people who were just shitting on him because they shit on everything WWE does. And it's very easy to see if you're in the public spotlight. And, look, he's spoken about his mental health struggles before as well. Like, how that can affect you when it's like, I'm actually, as far as I'm concerned, I'm doing the best work of my life. And because I work for WWE, you just go, oh, shit. And, like, the start of Firefly Funhouse, regardless of where it went with the Fiend and the red lights and the Seth Rollins match and stuff like that, there was indisputably bad stuff. There was a lot of stuff here that, you know, was good and he still got shot on because he was in WWE.
I didn't see that at all. Like, when the Fiend first started, like, it was, like, it's mad to think now when you look at, like, where it ended up. But, like, that got a mad reaction at the start because it was deadly, like, do you know what I mean?
The Fiend Stephanie did, like, when he came out against Battle.
Man, I can't believe, how did they get from that? Like, like, how are we here? Do you remember, like, how excited I was on Low Blows talking about that? And it'd be like, oh, my God, this is the best shit ever. This is the coolest character I've seen. And now I'm just like, right, he's gone.
Do you remember the tweets people were putting out, like, please don't take this away from me, he represents my soul. Don't mess it up. Do you remember those tweets, like, where people were just, like, making the Fiend their personality?
Oh, God,
and, like,
so crazy.
Your soul, like, wrestles in red light.
Yeah.
It's like, no, not that part.
The Fiend represents a darkness within me that is not.
Yeah, there was one particular tweet that was like, yes, this represents how I feel about the world, and blah, blah, blah.
Do you ever see the YouTube comments on any of the Fiend segments? Like, I'm talking, like, this is like late Fiend, this is when things are like unbelievably shy, right? And all the comments would be like people going, this is amazing. Oh my God. Like, people being like, Alexa Bliss deserves an Oscar. The Fiend deserves an Oscar. This deserves best picture. It'd be like, I don't know how young the people were that were like writing all this, yeah. But it's like, it was really funny to look through all the comments. I was like, the storytelling, this is storytelling.
Well, also as well, like, it's kind of, you know, that's, there's something for everyone, and it's not for us, like, it's not for me, I didn't enjoy it either, I can't say that I did, but, like, yeah, just to play devil's advocate, there probably was people out there, and yeah, you know what, if you're out there, you'll get to enjoy them in AEW Armory,
lads. But my stance on it is that, like, you know, when I was a kid, I was rooting for, like, John Cena against the Great Khali, you know what I mean, whereas the adults thought that was shite. So the point is, just make good wrestling for the adults, the kids would like anything, you know what I mean, like, literally, it doesn't have to be shite to cater to anyone.
That's a really good point. Do you know what as well? Like, I'm going to make you actually sad here by teasing you with something that you can never have. Imagine he was released. Imagine Lucha Underground still existed. Imagine how good he'd be.
I like the fact you went to Lucha Underground, right? But it's like proper boring cinematic. Not cinematic, just Wyndham Rotunda. With like, you know, right there, like tight. Come on!
Biggest twist they could do. What's happened?
It was like the most him promotion ever.
Dario Cueto was just like, I have a feeling there's something inside you, and he's like, no.
He just goes back to being Husky Harris. Yeah. That's like, goes to the
I'll tell you what's inside me, a desire to win this match. Yeah.
And please the fans.
I do this for each and every one of you.
Man, who knows?
Now I want to see AEW do that.
That could be, yeah. Or he does it in TNA or something. Amazing stuff. On top of this, anyway, moving back to the news. On top of this, it's been revealed that Adam Cole has been working without a contract for the past couple of weeks and will reevaluate things with WWE after SummerSlam. Should we already start referring to him as AEW star Adam Cole? Or do you think there's a possibility he might stay with WWE, Katie?
Oh, there's not a hope he's staying with WWE, is there?
You think?
Like, I mean, I can't see him on Raw or SmackDown. I can't see him, like, I don't know. The only way is, like, maybe the 24/7 title. Maybe that's where they can stick him.
Oh, God. Oh, just leave that, please.
I just feel like he's at that point where if he was going to do a move to the main roster, he would have done it. I just don't feel like there's a place for him on the main roster. And I think he's going to AEW.
Okay, it'd make a lot of sense. He's got a lot of friends there. He's got his girlfriend there. Go for it.
He's 100% an AEW superstar. WWE have fucked it. They fucked it. Don't even bother showing up for Monday Night Raw. It's done. It's over. It's finished. It's gone. They're pretty much out of business from what I can see. They fucked it. They bottled it. They had their chance and they ruined it. So AEW are going to capitalize yet again. WWE are finished.
You've doubled down on an answer which got you no points last time. You know what? I respect the moxie. Point for game.
Lost points for this before.
Yeah, no, you lose points if you win.
my apathy for Adam Cole.
Question 3. WWE are reportedly planning a Queen of the Ring tournament, which has been rumoured to take place in October, with the final being held in Saudi Arabia. Is this good progress, as WWE will no doubt spin it, or is it a bit too on the nose, Corporate King?
Nah, Saudi Arabia's a kip, and WWE's a kip for running shows in Saudi Arabia. They fucked it, they bottled it, don't let it go up and run it wrong. You fucking ruined it. It's dead, it's over, it's finished. You're basically out of business from what I can see. WWE are in the mud, they're done, it's over. Goodbye.
Since we started Low Blow 7 years ago, we've made fun of the fact that every time around SummerSlam and afterwards, and as it gets into the autumn, it goes into WWE are dying mode. Corbin Keane getting the season started off early, so fair play. Katie, what do you think?
Look, this is just WWE trying to like get some goodwill where there is no goodwill to be squeezed out. It's like, let's get topical, the Irish government, you know, today released legislation that you can have outdoor gatherings because they in fact had one themselves last week. Yeah. They're just backtracking it, and that's what WWE are doing. They're like, we're put on this event now so you forget the past. You know, and it's ridiculous, and we all see through it, and I genuinely don't know anyone who watches Saudi Arabia shows.
Okay. I do enjoy your topical voice. Let's get topical. The Irish government. Point again. Question 4. Domino's Pizza distanced themselves from last week's Dynamite main event after an ad aired during picture-in-picture while Nick Gage was cutting up Chris Jericho with a pizza cutter. What's your dream food and wrestling tie-in, though?
Right, so barbed wire exploding match again. Let's give it another go. Except let's let the explosions come from popping candy. Ooh. So hear me out. They get them, they fill their mouth with popping candy, put some duct tape around that motherfucker, and they just let that popping candy pop, and they just let them freak out in the middle of the room. Because there is nothing scarier than when you eat something that you don't realise is full of popping candy. It makes you feel like your teeth are disintegrating, and it is terrifying, and that is how they should do the next step match.
Okay, interesting. Strong egg with Corbin Keane.
AEW goes to Chicago. Everyone's expecting CM Punk. Alright, cool. Raw comes to Dublin. And when it comes to Dublin, everybody's thinking, oh, who's the big Dublin-based star that's gonna return? Oh, shit! And all of a sudden, you hear very generic music. You hear, na-na-na-na-na-na, whatever. And out comes Reddy Brecky Lynch. And she comes out, she grabs the mic. And she's like, here, basically puts like, a pipe bomb on why Reddy Breck is so good and defeats the purpose of Porridge. And Porridge doesn't even need to exist anymore because Reddy Breck is here, right? And then it cuts backstage. Remember the draft in 2002?
Yeah.
When everybody would sit around in a big room, be like, are they going Raw or SmackDown? It cuts to everybody in the back in the one room sitting down, and they're all eating. Some of them are eating Reddy Breck, some are waiting till after the match, but they're all just sort of nodding and agreeing, like, yeah, it's a good point, it's a good point. And that's basically how the show opens, and everybody's happy.
Okay, I let that run along, but I just wanted to hear where you went with it. Reddy Brecky Lynch gets the point, and the episode's
like, again, I've been penalised before for running long. This is a conspiracy.
This wasn't good as mine, though. If you
get away with it. Ronda earlier, it's a good show.
Katie's just flipped the table, you can't see it, but it's an audio form, but like...
Question 5, speaking of Chris Jericho, he accidentally last week tagged his wife while wishing her a happy anniversary. This is hilarious. And then accidentally revealed her to be a giant Storm the Capitol head. The question I have for you guys though is, what do you think he bought her for the big day?
Who's first?
Yeah, you're first.
Okay. WrestleMania 23 TBD is what I think he got her. But all the other matches edited out. So it's just Donald Trump, the hair versus hair match, where Donald Trump wins for two reasons. One, Donald Trump's on top. Obviously, that'll make her very happy. That's the ultimate gift. But two, it was also Bobby Lashley, the baldest wrestler in the history of wrestling, in a hair versus hair match. That is something we don't talk about often enough. That's hilarious. And I think that's something that she'd appreciate as well. So I'd say that's what he got her.
There is not a hair on Bobby Lashley. And I don't know how it's taken us, 14 years to notice this, so fantastic.
Like, he has a Lucha State of Puestas record despite not having a mask or hair.
Katie, I'll give you a few extra seconds because it wasn't fair if you need it. What do you think he bought her for the big day?
I think he got her some social media lessons because her Instagram was closed so fucking fast I didn't even get to have a snoop. I have missed out on all the gossip and the scandal, and honestly this is the biggest travesty about this whole story is that I didn't get to witness this unfold myself. There is nothing worse than being late to a fucking social media party.
You went for the sympathy vote. I was intrigued by Bobby Lashley. I was like, how are we not talking about this every day?
No mask either. Like, tell me, it's not like a mask for his hair. Like, nothing. He's got nothing for any hair or mask back. And he's still competing with on the biggest stage of them all. I don't think bad night it. Like,
Corbin Keane has leveled things up. Very good. Time to talk about the in-ring from the week, the good and the bad. Starting with the bad, because it's time for...
Say something stupid.
Say something stupid. Worst moments of the week in at number 5. Let's talk about NXT UK.
So NXT UK, look, I give out about their backstage promos a lot. And I'm going to do it again this week, because it's topical. So I had talked a few weeks ago in This Is Awesome about how Amel challenged Miko Satomura. And how it was really good, it was a fiery promo, it was this and that. So the set for the next challenger was not as fiery. Basically what it was Miko walked into the NXT UK women's changing room and all the girls are just sitting around like they're in a waiting room for a doctor's, to be honest. With Millie McKenzie at the door like a bouncer with the arms folded, like giving the nod like, or not tonight. And she just comes in and basically says like, I want everyone to challenge me. Like, Amel challenged me, and I was like, oh, cool, we're going to get some, like, you know, promos, stand-up, like, you know, people fighting their battle for why they should, like, challenge for the NXT UK women's title. What we actually got was they all just randomly, like, just turned to the person to their left and started scrapping. No one challenged Megan. But she just stood there and nodded watching the chaos. And I was like, this is the opposite of what you just requested.
I challenge you.
You actually left without a challenge, right? And now you've created all these like alternate timelines where we're all just going to go scrap with each other. And it was just like the laziest promo writing ever, where you're literally like, just like, okay, well, you two are probably going to feud, so you go off. And you know what I mean? It was just like, it wasn't good, and we still don't know who's challenging Miko.
Just damn me, who's challenging.
we don't know what's happening, and it was just all a bit awkward and a bit weird, to be honest.
Yeah, that sounds like sneaky amazing from like the wrong standpoint, you know what I mean? But hilarious stuff. In the number four, let's talk about SmackDown.
Right, SmackDown had a contract signing, and it was actually probably like one of my favorite contract signings ever. Like, I'd say like possibly like top five, like, do you know what I mean? Because normally they're quite a generic thing, you know, talk flip table, sign contract or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's sort of the usual shit. This is actually pretty different, and I really liked it. So it started at Roman Reigns and Finn Balor, you know, because that's what the match was scheduled to be. Roman Reigns and Finn Balor at SummerSlam. Reigns sitting at the head of the table, Finn Balor sitting where he's sitting, and they're talking back and forth, and Roman Reigns turned around and he said, John Cena thinks that I'm dodging him by taking his challenge. That means he thinks that he's better than you, that he's more of a man than you. And like, it actually dawned on me, do you know what? I know Roman has not been the most honourable person, you know, I'll admit that, but I don't believe he's dodging John Cena at all, man. Everybody's saying, oh, he's dodging John Cena. Like, he faced John Cena before, right? And beat him cleanly, yeah? And in that time, how much has Roman Reigns improved? Like, a lot. Like, leaps and bounds, right? How much did John Cena improve? None. In fact, he may have even declined a bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Has he had a match since then?
Well, this is what I'm getting to, right? The last time John Cena... Like, the last time John Cena won a singles match against somebody on the roster, right? February 2018. 3.5 years ago. Oh, yeah, he's beaten old cunts like Goldust and Kane and shit. But like, the last wrestler that he actually beat that's still there now is AJ Styles, and it was like the start of 2018, right? So with that in mind, what the fuck has John Cena done to earn a title shot? You contrast that over to Finn Balor, who was just off an NXT title run where he's beaten the likes of Adam Cole, Pete Dunne, wiped through everyone until he came to Karrion Kross. You know, that's a world title, by the way, you know what I mean? So, and it's not even his first time holding it. He's also the first person to win the Universal title, a title that Reigns has held and Cena hasn't.
And he never lost.
What?
He never lost it.
Never lost it, and he also beat Roman Reigns on his Raw debut.
Yeah.
He's also got a speed and quickness that Cena doesn't have. He can affect Roman Reigns' game in ways that John Cena can't. I think Balor's a bigger challenge, and I think Reigns turned Cena down because he was just angry that Cena showed up and ruined his moment and started trying to make a show of him. So I don't think he's actually dodging him at all, to be honest, and I think he'd batter Cena. Is that why I'm putting it and say something stupid? No. that was just a side note. But also, I mean, look at John Cena. Like, imagine Tito Ortiz, because this is all people say, oh, but John Cena held the title 17 times, whatever the fuck it is. Man, if Tito Ortiz, a decorated mixed martial artist, returned to the UFC tomorrow and challenged Izzy or whoever, he gets head kicked in. You know what I mean? Because, you know, just because he won it back in the day doesn't mean that he's still the man. You know what I mean? Anyway, moving on. Finn Balor's about to sign the contract, and this part fucking killed me. I actually was crying. Like, when I said I was crying laughing at him, like, I genuinely was like, oh, he's about to sign it. And sad Corbin comes through the ring, beats the fuck out of Finn Balor, throws him across it, out to his table, just into the corner, comes in, and you just see him scrambling with his pen, desperately trying to sign the contract and like save his life. He's like, come on, give me the big money match, please.
And Reigns is just there like, I'll allow this.
Yeah. And then Cena comes in, clatters Baron Corbin, and writes down the, like, my favourite signature ever in fucking marker, C-E-N-A, which is how signatures should be, by the way. None of this fucking fancy, like, squiggly bullshit where you can't even see the letters. I don't understand the point of that. But, so we're getting
right... I know who it is.
Yeah.
I know that that's an autograph by John Cena.
Yeah.
Because what's it say? Cena.
Yeah, exactly.
You can't get it mixed up.
So now it was a brilliant swerve. We're getting Reigns and Cena at SummerSlam. Probably Balor, you know, after that, you know, in the next upcoming pay-per-views after he scraps the Corbin, which is, again, another great, like, feud. But the reason this didn't say something stupid, because it blocked us from the match we wanted to see, man. when sad Corbin picked up the contract, I genuinely went,
that's the match. That's the match. There it is.
When it happened, I was like, hang on, let's just process what has just happened. I have been teased with Roman Reigns versus Baron Corbin. And I went, yeah! That is the power of characters, you know what I mean?
Think like, of last year. No, think of like, no, it wasn't last year.
It was the start, yeah.
The end of 2018, start of 2019, where they wrestled every week. I think, Katie, I think you were covering that at the time, and you were like, I never want to see this match again.
No, we did. It was fucking, yeah, no.
But actually, now, when you see it on Virgin Media this weekend.
it was just so funny. It just can be like, and you just know it's logic as well. You don't have to explain it. It's like, look, if I get this match, you know what I mean? The money that comes with it and all that. It was just fucking amazing. I loved it. And yeah, again, this is just, man, SmackDown was just deadly. Like, that's all I have to say. Like,
yeah, it was really
good. Oh, sorry. By the way, that was Say Something Stupid. Number four.
That's why I slowed down on the list. But wordy point. In number three, I want to cover a couple of things from AEW. And first, we'll talk about Dynamite. And first, before I begin this, I do want to apologize to Keane. I do apologize in advance, but Nick Gage is not a good wrestler. He's not a good wrestler. He's no. Like, this is where I realized, I'm like, I don't think I've ever actually watched Nick Gage wrestle. I think I've seen Dark Side of the Ring and assumed that I've seen a lot of them, but I've never actually seen him wrestle. Because I was all in. And when they opened Dynamite last week, and they opened with the 10-man tag, which was to decide like Kenny Omega's next title challengers and the big feud, and I was like, I don't know if that should be the main event. But then I was like, no, Jericho and Gage is more like, tune in, like, watch this. This is going to be mad, like, if they build it up. So I'm like, okay, I'm okay with putting this in the main event. That's fine. I saw what they were going for. But seeing him outside of his environment, and in an environment where there's expectations for it to be good, it really stood out like a sore thumb. He's one of these lads that, and again, I'm not breaking any news here. This is pretty much what his Dark Side of the Ring was. He's one of these lads that turned to wrestling because he'd be successful nowhere else in life. He made it in wrestling and still ended up in prison. Do you know what I mean? Like, for robbing a bank. And then he turned to death matches because it's like, I'm sorry, but it's the only way within wrestling that he could stand out. Like, it's not that he's this amazing wrestler and he just happens to, like, and I know I'm bringing up a controversial name here, and I'm not saying I endorse anything about him or anything like that. Well, no, I'll say a nicer name. Terry Funk. You know what I mean? Terry Funk's an amazing wrestler who's also amazing at death matches. Mick Foley, amazing wrestler, could do amazing hardcore matches and that sort of stuff. There are great wrestlers who can do both. He is not a great wrestler who can only do death matches. Do you know what I mean? His offense was fucking embarrassing for someone that's supposed to be keeping a Hall of Fame standard wrestler like Jericho down. He does a Falcon Arrow like I do a fucking Frog Splash. I'm not being bad, like...
That's harsh. That's harsh, man.
His strikes are god-awful. And even his pizza cutter, like, even the little slashes he did, they look like a backyard in doing it. Do you know what I mean? It was really bad. I wasn't against putting him in the main event when the show started, but it became embarrassing as the show continued. This felt like we were all some like young Fine Gael like kind of posh lads giving like a drug addict money to hurt themselves for our amusement. It was awkward at some stages because he was that bad. MJF on commentary and Jericho being so game to put his body through stuff made this worthwhile in the end, which is why it's not number one. But, and again, I see what AEW are going for. So, like the explosive barbed wire, I don't want to crush them on it. Because on paper, I was all in. Do you know what I mean? And then it just didn't pan out. And that's not necessarily their fault. Nick Gage just doesn't have it in him to bring his end up to it. It ultimately didn't pay off. And, like, I don't know. I'm going to open the floor. I imagine you've got a different point of view.
Disagree. But, I think he's deadly. Okay. There's no... I have no... nothing else to say really beyond that. I just think he's just the best.
Okay. Okay. I don't want to take that away from
MDK
you.
MDK forever, if that's really all I have to say. Like,
I don't want to take that away from you. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like if I saw him in a GCW environment, like you described last week, where you're like, he's going through his army of fans, and there's this and that, and he's built up, I'm like, I understand it. Do you know what I mean? But it's like watching him in a polished...
He didn't have that interest, did he?
No, he's like coming out on a big TNT stage and it's like, oh, this is just bad. Like, he's coming out in like shit indie wrestler gear, the cut off kind of t-shirt and stuff like that, and it's like, oh, this is bad. Oh, this is bad. This is not good. This is it's like immediately, like before when Jericho came out, I'm like, let's do this, Nick Gage's been show up, and then he came out, I'm like, oh,
Do you know what? People change their mind, right?
What?
If we put Nick Gage, right, at WrestleMania, but we give him a WrestleMania, it's his entrance on a WrestleMania stage, so he has to get, like, from the top all the way to the ring through all the sea of, like, fans, like me, basically, just all like, with his licensed theme song as well. It would have been a lot. It would have been a lot to shout out for. It's Metallica, so it would have been a lot to shout out for. It's one AEW, so I understand that.
Seems excessive, like.
But if you had the WrestleMania entrance, do you know what I mean? I think it changed your mind.
Like, we have seen it. Do you remember when we watched all the ECW originals at WrestleMania and we're like, yeah, they need to be in the Hammerstein, man. You know what I mean? Like, seeing Sandman, like, in the corporate boxes, like, rah! It's like, this is not the same. It's like, I can only notice your beer belly now. I never even saw that in ECW. Like, I don't know, it was just a fish out of water. It just didn't work for me. Feel free, if I'm wrong, feel free to tweet in and disagree. Here's something that I think we will agree on, though, okay? This is less contentious. Because in the number two, I want to talk about AEW Dark. And a few weeks ago, I spoke about becoming a fan of Max Caster after his rap at Double or Nothing and really kind of got out of himself and made the most of having fans back. Sadly, I think that initial fandom may have expired because this week, to mark AEW Dark's 100th episode, he decided to land them in deep shit with a tasteless rap that made rape jokes and also slagged off Simone Biles' mental health. This was awful. The exact quotes, if you're wondering where. I don't feel comfortable reading this out, but I'll explain why we kind of have to read it out at this stage. He said, "The acclaimed kicking ass from Miles makes you claim mental health like you're Simone Biles." It's like, you're literally just saying, haha, you suffer from mental health problems. Along with the next line was, "The Seidel's going to pay the cost. I'm going to treat those bitches like Duke LaCrosse." That was a reference. If you don't understand that reference, it was a reference to a case where three Duke college students were accused of gang raping another student. I should add that they were later cleared of doing so, but it was quite contentious because there were three white lacrosse players, high like profiled sports stars at the college, and this was like a black student, so there was a race relations incident as well. So it's considered quite contentious and not something that you throw into a wrestling promo for lads. It was not great. But look again, I'm not even that mad at Max Caster here, okay? People can whiff and make a bad judgment and just think, we've seen it before. Katie, I'm sure you've had, like, you know, wrestlers come to you with ideas, trainees come to you with ideas with, do you know what would have made great heat? And you've had to go, okay, no.
Yes.
No. And it's not, we've all, like, everyone who's kind of done it has done it. I've done promos which have gone down like lead balloons, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not judging people like you kind of get it wrong, because it can be tough to gauge these things at time. What I'm going to call, like, and look, it should be called out, but I'm not going to call for people's heads here. I think it should just be addressed, and that's that. What makes me angry here is a couple of things. First, AEW's reaction to it, okay? Because I know that, like, you guys are saying you haven't seen this, or you haven't seen anything about it, or even the quotes.
No.
I'm writing that, yeah?
No, I saw it, but I just didn't, like, I'm just out of touch with what's going on.
Okay, fair enough. Firstly, like, the people who make these editorial decisions, and whether it's Dark, so whether that's Tony Khan, Cody, etc., or whether it's not, the book still falls with them at the end of the day, because it's got the AEW name on it, that they thought this was acceptable, and if so, you probably imagine that the decision like behind it was, this is edgy. Do you know what I mean? And very attitude era type stuff. When it was clear from even Matt Sydal and Julia Hart on air that they were really uncomfortable with this. Their face expressions were like, ooh, like it was like, and then they just kept going with it. Secondly, instead of apologizing, what they decided to do was, because this went viral in a tweet, because not that many people watch Dark, but like what they decided to do was they decided to put in a copyright claim against the tweet, so like the guy would have to take it down. Do you know what I mean? It would have to get taken off Twitter. So like, they're not apologizing for it, they're not acknowledging it, they're actually attacking the person who put it down, and like, his Twitter can get taken. I'm right in saying that, you know more than I would about that, but like, if you get hit with copyright strikes, that's bad for your Twitter.
That's probably, yeah, I wouldn't know as much about Twitter as I would about YouTube, but I think there is like a kind of like, you can only put up so many, I don't know.
Yeah, so like, again, there's a copyright claim put in there, where, and like, here's another thing, AEW are notoriously hands-on about having people allowed to put up their footage when it's complimentary to their footage. So they've already had, like, Aubrey Edwards, I remember Matthew got a copyright claim against him, and he was nearly banned off Twitter as a result of it. And Aubrey Edwards ended up intervening and going, we'll get this sorted out, we'll get their Mr. Media. But when the media goes against them, they're like, fuck it. Do you know what I mean? And they attack it, even when they're wrong. And, like, the fact is, then they just re-uploaded Dark without the footage, which, again, that's fair enough, but, like, there's no acknowledgement of it. Like, do you remember when Jim Cornette, like, the NWA put out the commentary that was racist? And, like, then they took it down and put it back up the next day without the commentary in it. And we're like, we're still going to give it to you. We're not going to say, oh, you edited it out. No, you put it up online, so fuck you, you still get your licks. And, like, to me, the fact that they haven't acknowledged or done anything about it besides trying to make it disappear is very covered up, because we never, ever apologize. Think about it. When have AEW ever apologized? When have they ever said something was bad? When the exploding deathmatch thing happened, they tried to pretend it was part of the storyline. When Cody was racist on the air, he started talking about how focus groups actually said that he wasn't racist, and, like, this and that, and he's still, like, I think his child's naming came into that at one stage. Like, it's very consistent with how AEW handled these issues. And secondly, the thing that annoys me about this is, it's AEW's fans and how they've responded to this. Because I saw a lot of people, like, when I went into the tweet, I saw your man's thread, because I wanted to see if he'd re-uploaded the footage, if he got to re-upload it after it. But, like, what I saw was him trying to defend himself and say, guys, this isn't funny, please stop, like, saying this is funny. Like, rape jokes aren't funny anymore, with what we know. And a lot of the reactions from AEW fans were like, lol, he's a heel, like, relax, and that kind of stuff. And it doesn't apply here. If you need to rest on rape jokes and bashing, let's put this into context. When you bash Simone Biles and her mental health issues, what are you actually bashing there? You're bashing a young, outspoken victim of sexual abuse as she suffers through mental health issues on the most public stage imaginable. That's what you're bashing there. Lol. It's not funny. Like the reality is, if you took all that, like, being a heel, then lol, you're just a shit heel who can't get heat in acceptable ways and has to try to be a shock jock like a shit Piers Morgan or Katie Hopkins. That's what you are. And that's the truth here. And their inconsistency around this kind of stuff just shows up how crap their outrage at WWE scandals are. Because I went onto a few of their accounts afterwards and I was like, were they mad about Bray Wyatt? Yeah, they were mad about Bray Wyatt. They're like, you have wasted this man's character so many times. And it's like, AEW make a rape joke. And it's like, oh, it's fine. And it's like, you have no consistency here. It's literally just, I like that company, so whatever they do is right. And I don't like that company, so they're wrong. It is ridiculous, the kind of cognitive dissonance when stuff like this plays a part. And if you want to be taken seriously, have some consistency. Otherwise, you're literally just making noise. It really bothered me this week, and it pissed me off. And again, Max Caster is almost the last person I'm angry with here. He's a kid who fucked up, made a poor error of judgment. It deserves to be called out, but, like, I don't think he should lose his job or anything. But the rest of it, everyone else around it, I was like, this is just shitty in general. And it's just toxic as well. So let's move on to more silly, stupid things. Let's talk, in at number one, about something which I will stand over that this was actually worse.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Raw.
Was it? Because I really don't feel like I'm complaining about Drew McIntyre's sword.
I think this was worse. I mean,
so just a little side note, when Rick said... shit Piers Morgan or Katie Hopkins, I thought he was going to say Katie Harvey. I was like, what the fuck? Then I was like, Katie H. I was like, whoa, what the
sides right.
Yeah, yeah, look at
them. Randomly drive by. It's like, you're taking a lot of digs at Katie, but this feels real.
Yeah, I was like, whoa.
No, I will stand
this
over
is, this. This is quite shit to be
This
fair.
Is very, very shit, but I also think we need a bit of levity, so let's talk about it.
Yeah, and look, I'm prefacing that. I don't hate Drew McIntyre. I know this show tells a different story, like, but I don't hate him. But I did hate what happened.
I just have to warn you, okay? When this show goes to air, the word don't will be edited. I hate Drew McIntyre.
You know, I even dug up an old picture of me and him backstage at PWU in case I ever needed proof that I think he's a nice guy.
Me and my best friend, Drew.
So look, he's in this feud with Jinder Mahal now. We've talked about, like, you know, Jinder's motorbike and stuff like that. But this week there was a handicap match with Shanky and Veer. Is that their names?
Yes.
Yeah, Shanky and Veer. Whenever I say Shanky, I think of Raven Creed. I'm like, why does she not have a sidekick who comes with her called Shanky? And basically, the reason why I hate this so much is I don't hate the fact he's bringing a sword. He's Scottish. I get it. I don't.
Scottish people are their swords. There's your driveway. That's your driveway. He's Scottish. You know this.
This is like, this is why her and Phil are.
Scotty, Scotty, stab, stab.
I don't know if you've been to Glasgow. They all have swords. Like they just, carried them around on their hip, you know.
Kelly Harvey is like Bret Hart. Like she's a babyface everywhere else except in Scotland, where her and Phil are nuclear heels.
No, but like I get the tie-in with his heritage, blah blah blah. Like I understand it. I understand the visual, the entrance. What I don't get is this segment they had on Monday Night Raw, where basically, I don't think I'll be happy with this storyline unless Drew McIntyre stabs someone, because that is where they've led us with the match and the promo that happened on Raw. Basically, I can't remember what happened in the match, but it ends with Drew McIntyre in the ring and the three lads on the other side, all with steel chairs, and Drew McIntyre pulls out his sword. And I'm there thinking, like, this is class. We're going to have, like, a fucking Jedi fight here, you know? Just like, whoo, whoo, and, like, a bit of bashing. It's going to be great. But, like, the tree lads bottle it and run away. Fair enough. He's got a sword. But, like, he was like a panto villain with the sword. You know what I mean? It was very much like he was in a panto with a fence and sword. And he's like, haha, touche. Like, you know what I mean? He's smiling. He's gesturing to the crowd.
Oh God.
Like, you know what I mean? It's all very lighthearted. It's very much like, oh look, these lads ran away from me and my big sword. Like, it's.
Do you ever see Hook, the movie?
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking
yeah.
of. It's Hook who's like, with the kids in the background, like,
Like, that's the vibes Drew was giving me in ring. And then it cuts to backstage, and Junior Mahal runs through, and in fairness, like, his promo's good, but he's selling it as if he just ran into fucking Michael Myers in a haunted house, you know what I mean? Like, he's shaking, his voice is shaking, he's like, oh my God, he's a madman, you know what I mean? And I'm just like, the two just didn't interconnect at all. I am just like, and then it cuts back to Drew, who's again like, woohoo! Like, sword in the air, and I'm just like, these two did not have a conversation before this segment to like solidify an objective. Like, is he a sword wielding maniac, as Jinder is leading us to believe, or is he fucking the panto villain like Drew McIntyre's playing him? And it was just so jarring to see the two things side by side. But even then, when Jinder cut his promo, like, he would sense the genuine fear that he thought he was going to get stabbed. And I'm like, but, like, Drew's the baby face. Why are they building it to a stabbing finish? Like, I just don't understand.
The only possible baby.
Like,
for me, it's like, the reason I hate it is, like, I don't like wrestling weapons that you can't actually use properly. Like, the kendo stick, for me, is the best wrestling, like, weapon in the world because, like, you know, when people smash the shit out of each other with them, it's like, there's no holding back, they just fucking smash shit out of each other with them. I mean, you see the red marks and, like, the actual, like, it looks sore as fuck because it is, like, they just use it. Mm. Even tables, I mean, I know, like, obviously, you know, in the Western world, they're you know, wrestling noise and they're, you know, obviously easy enough to break, but they still, you know, you can still tell a story with it. It doesn't look like, it doesn't look, you know, like, oh, he held back when he put them through a table. Like, no, I put them through a table, you know what I mean? Well, like, yeah, a good example of like a wrestling weapon that doesn't work for me. Now, obviously, I'll always pop when like Triple H takes out the sledgehammer. But the reality is, when he hits somebody with a sledgehammer, he doesn't actually hit them the way you'd hit somebody with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, because
he puts his fist over it.
Yeah, he puts his fist. Like, who does that? If you're trying to hit somebody with a fucking weapon, why would you put your hand over it?
I'm not knocking down a wall.
Yeah.
I
like to think that's what he does. Like, he's knocked down like a wall, like instinctively.
It's just instinctive. Like, he usually uses okay, but then just that one time he's not thinking. He's just stepping. He's just pissed him off. He just picks up the sledgehammer. And he's just,
But like, for me, the sword is the ultimate like version of that, where it's like, what can he fucking do with this? Like, that's why it's so pantomime. Like, Katie put it so well. But like, literally, what can he do with this? Like, what can he fucking do? He can't stab someone with it. He can't like pick it up the wrong way and then hit them with it, you know what I mean? Like,
it'd be very funny if he actually beheaded one of the lads. Like, shank his head just rolls.
It's like,
shit.
Yeah, like, Jinder, look, I'm sorry, but this story's falling apart. We need to spice things up. I hope you understand. Like,
but like, Remember the last time they tried to do something like this and it was the eye for an eye match? Like, remember how
that turned out
well.
That turned out very well.
I mean, yeah, like, Rey Mysterio's eye even grew back after it, so.
We learned things then. You know what? The thing I like about podcasts is that sometimes things just work, and for whatever reason, Katie Harvey doing impressions of Drew McIntyre, it never disappoints, ever. Amazing, amazing stuff, and justified being number one. Fantastic. Anyway, guys, let's talk about the good moments from the week, because it's time for... Best moments of the week. In at number five, let's talk about the good from NXT UK.
Yeah, it's just a small thing. Ginny versus Valkyrie. Look, I'm biased. I'm gonna make up Valkyrie again. I always do. I just really like this match. It had like an aggression that I think has been missing from the women's matches. It had the fucking thunder from down under slap that was heard around the world. Just like, and I like it because it plays off Ginny's character, where she is kind of like, she'll slap you, you know what I mean? It's real sort of demeaning. But when Valkyrie fucking pulled her hand back and just upended her, flattened her against the wall, she went through the wall. There was a Ginny-shaped hole. And like sound effects. I just enjoy spots like that that take you by surprise. You know when you're watching a match and there's just always like, there's like one good strike and you're just like, oh fuck, you know what I mean? Like, it was filled with nice little moments like that. And like Joseph Connors at ringside, I appreciate like male valets. I don't think we get them enough. It's a different dynamic. So it was just a really good, like, fun, aggressive little match, and just different from what else is going on in the women's division. So I would just go out of your way to watch it, like, okay, if you're watching NXT UK.
Check it out, there you go. In number four, I saw the good from AAW.
AAW, yeah. It's weird saying that now. Like, I used to say AAW, like, you know, a couple of years ago, I wouldn't think, but now it's like, yeah. Basically, I watched an AAW show for the first time in 2 or 3 years, maybe. It's been a while, it's been a long time.
Who are AAW? Just
AAW are, like, so yeah, basically, I've been looking through, like, certain, like, indie wrestling shows and stuff like that. AAW are kind of like one of the biggest indies in America. They're based in Chicago, which is actually a great place for an indie promotion. And I mean, saw that, like, I think they sold out Raw, and they obviously sold out the Rampage, first Rampage.
Yeah.
And how many seats was that? Do you remember? Or?
Oh, I don't know.
It's something like,
well, it's big, yeah.
Something crazy, and they sold it out on like week's notice. You know what I mean? Just at the mere like suggestion, like, you're the. Did we mention that actually?
We'll be talking about.
No, it's like the best in the world.
We'll
it's
be
like,
talking
oh. about that. But. Yeah, so Chicago's a great place for wrestling promotion. Anyway, what I like about AAW is that, like, they have most of the wrestlers are kind of signed elsewhere, but it's like what I said about GCW last week. You get to see them in a different light. So the main event of their show that I watched was for the title. It was Fred Yehi against Mance Warner, and Fred Yehi normally is he's like a in Ring of Honor, he'd be in the Pure division. He'd become like a Jonathan Gresham type character, very technically sound and stuff. But in AAW, at one point, and I didn't know this because I hadn't watched any previous AAW shows, but they showed it in the video package, he beat the shit out of Mance Warner. Mance Warner is covered in blood, and he spells out Yehi on the canvas in Mance Warner's blood. Like, that's fucking vicious, man. Yeah. You don't see him doing that in Ring of Honor, you know what I mean? Like, if he did, it'd be like, what the fuck's he doing? Like, it's going to be a pure technical match. But it's cool seeing everybody. It's so weird. I had a conversation with my dad about this, like, about the swearing in wrestling. It's such a small thing, like, being able to say fuck. You wouldn't be like, oh, wow, that was great. Look, he said fuck. Wow, excellent. But I genuinely think being able to swear makes it so much more authentic. I think that's, like, one of the reasons, like, remember when NXT UK first showed up and it felt real kind of like weird, like everybody's being real kind of like, I don't know, like,
diluted.
Yeah, diluted, do you know what I mean? Because it feels like if people were to fight, they would be swearing at each other, you know that kind of way? And I feel like, I've always found that AAW kind of feels more authentic, and they use a lot of Impact wrestlers, and I always feel like when I see them in AAW, it always feels a bit more real than when I see them in Impact. And I don't know, it's so weird, but it's like, do you ever see the In-Betweeners, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And do you ever see the US In-Betweeners?
No.
Or in trailers.
Well, I have. Yeah.
Shite. Right, I won't get into it. It is fucking shite.
Yeah.
But one of the things is, they can't swear. Because, you know, that's the way it is over there. And, like, at one point, you know, bus wankers. They're coming past. It's the exact same scene. The yellow car, Yank Jay sticking his head out the window, and he goes, bus turds. Rick, I was waiting for that physical reaction.
Oh.
You just can't see it. Well, Rick shrunk into himself. Oh. He is now 3 inches shorter. His neck just, he has no neck. It's just chest, head. Head, chest. No neck in between. And it's justifiably so, because it's just so painfully awful. And again, it's like you don't watch the in-betweeners and go, ha ha, he said fuck. But it's a storytelling kind of device. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's not like, because I think there's a line, and we've spoken about this before as well, where when promotions are cursing just to be mad.
Yeah. Don't, you're not trying to be edgy. You don't bring it, we don't need to. But if things get serious and
there's
heated,
freedom,
you know what I mean?
There. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, you're fucked. It's like, oh, he's fucked. You know what I mean?
It's a throwaway kind
of thing. But as well, the wrestlers are good, the matches are good, but the one thing I fucking love about AEW, and this is why I want to sort of get back into watching it, even though they're not in IWTV or anything like that, they're kind of on their own, they do Fight and they do their own on-demand service.
Right.
But their video packages are fucking, like, top of the fucking, like, obviously, I wouldn't put it, like, on Sean Ryan's level, because Sean Ryan would take shit from, like, I mean, you'd have, like, Walter coming out of Bray Head, you know what I mean? Like, that's, like, you're not going to get that anywhere, that's a ridiculous level, you know what I mean? But the next best thing is AAW. They have a whole fucking team of people. I know one of their names is, I think, Rob Malinowski, I think. And then, I don't remember the rest of their names. I didn't know there was multiple people working on it. But there is, and they put a lot of effort in. I think they put them up on their YouTube and stuff as well. AAW films, where it's just promos for big matches and stuff, but it's really, they make it feel so, like, real. You know what I mean? Like, I didn't know, like, I knew who Mance Warner and Fred Yehi were, but I didn't really care, because, you know, going into it, like, it's my first time watching AEW in ages. I'm just sort of watching it for the crack. I'm not, like, overly invested, but I watched their video package beforehand, and I was like, it's deadly, you know what I mean?
Is there anything in particular that you recommend?
What do you mean?
Videos, like...
Oh, video package-wise?
Yeah, so I can just tweet a link up.
I don't know, it might be on YouTube, I don't know, but the one for Fred Yehi and Mance Warner, I can't remember, because, I watched it on the show, so I don't know,
Psycho,
what the...
Psycho, is that it? The top one?
Oh, that looks about right. Yeah, I mean, they're all good anyway, so there's nothing. Watch this be like Windows Movie Maker, like fucking pained and all. It's like the one time I recommend it without checking. It's like.
Mance Warner.
But, the match was great. New champions all around, and this is just the icing on the cake, right? Along with their fucking excellent video packages, their roster, their matches, and all that. Who just won the AAW Women's Championship at United We Stand?
Is it Allison Kay?
that's actually what made me watch it. I was like, Allison Kay won the championship. I was like, all right, we'll give this a watch. And the rest of the show impressed. You've also got the likes of, I can't think off the top of my head, there's something like Josh Alexander, Ace Austin, all my favourites. And I think it's a very promising promotion. So I'm probably going to keep an eye on it going forward. There's a lot of indie wrestling now that I kind of want to keep my eye on in America. I don't know, it's just interesting. PWG is back as well. I won't watch it personally because they don't actually stream. But you know what's actually interesting with PWG? I didn't know this, but do you know why they don't stream?
Why?
I always thought it was because, like, they just weren't arsed, or they wanted to be, like, they didn't want to grow. They wanted to stay, like, at indie level or whatever it was and give out DVDs a month later, like, the old school way. It turns out that, you know the way in other promotions, like Ring of Honor and stuff, you're not allowed, like, wrestle, like, depending on the contracts, you know, like, you can only wrestle for one company or whatever. What a lot of those contracts say is you can wrestle for another indie promotion if they don't stream.
Yeah.
But every indie promotion streams, so it's fully exclusive. Except PWG doesn't stream. So you are actually able to wrestle in PWG. Supposedly this is what I've heard, but I think that's really, really interesting if that's true. So it's kind of like a workaround where it's like they'll never be like the number one promotion because it's difficult to kind of watch it until you get the DVD like a month later.
Yeah.
But for those who live in California and for those who are in the area, that's a fucking, you've got like one of the best indies, you know what I mean? It'll always be in that kind of safe spot of like, it'll never outgrow itself, but it'll never be like under delivering either. Do you know what I mean?
They love, like, they're kind of the equivalent of, say, OTT and the Tivoli. And if they could just have the Tivoli forever and sell that out, like, whenever they want to show, that's it.
That's pretty much. They had fucking Malakai Black and all showing up at the last one. Just because they could, like, do you know what I mean? It's fucking gas. But, AAWS, pretty good.
Do you need a link to their video packages there if you want to check it out on the Loblos Twitter? Also, as well, while we're talking about video packages, Sean Ryan, I didn't include this because what more can we say? There's another prime target though on NXT this
week.
I'm
so excited
talking about Wilder against Ilya Dragunov. It's I'll be straight up with you, it's not the best because like there's just not that much to work with. Like it's just kind of a talking head sting with dramatic shots from.
I hope Ilya Dragunov comes out of the water and bright head, even though it's not relevant to the story anymore.
Yeah.
I hope they do like all the old stuff we saw from the OC video packs that don't tie into the story, but they just look cool.
Just redoes them, that's gas. On that note as well, like just a funny thing when you're talking about like cursing, making things more realistic. On the very first radio show I did, which was on community radio, we did it. The gimmick was it was a normal radio show except wrestlers were promoting it. So we do works, but you wouldn't know what's a work and what's not. You know what I mean? So to do it every now and then, we'd like if something went wrong. But it was really, we were planning it. If something went wrong, we'd like accidentally curse. And we'd be like, oh, for fuck's sake, like. And then like, and it works though. Like, because people are like, I thought yous were messing, but you cursed. Like, we had co-presenters from the station on the show who didn't know what was real and what wasn't. But the difference that a little curse, and again, what you speak up there, the freedom to curse. It's not that we're going, fuck!
Yeah,
instead of
yeah.
just going, fuck off, will you? Like, in a normal way, like, it does, it really works. That's a great point, very intriguing. I'm looking forward to checking out the video when we get home. In at number three, let's talk about the good from Raw. I agree with this, I saw it, I was a fan.
This is one of my favourite storylines in wrestling right now, and it is Ali and Mansoor. And I'm so happy because I gave out a lot when Mansoor was brought to Raw and his 2-year winning streak was immediately decimated for no reason on the first episode. And I'm glad to say I'm wrong because it actually led to one of my favourite storylines. I feel like I'm saying that a lot lately. Makes me feel like a jobber about wrestling. I am wrong so often. It's not even really specifically about what's happened on Raw. It's the entire dynamic the two of them have right now. So. After Mansoor got bet, he basically like wants Ali to mentor him, and he's like, you know, he's getting them put together in tag matches and stuff like that, and it's kind of this like, it's developed now where like Mansoor is like the annoying little brother, and like Ali is like begrudgingly looking after him now, and it's really nice and it's really fun, and it's like the two lads doing a great job, and it's different from Raw. And it's good. So like what happened on Monday was they were wrestling T-Bar and Mace. And
how
like,
are they still employed? How do we not have Bray Wyatt, but we still have T-Bar and Mace?
I hate their class.
Oh, I understand if you're a turner and be like, oh yeah, Don,
the
Jackamace. Yeah, he was killed or Retribution.
No, not Retribution. Just Mace and T-Bar.
That is all that's left of Retribution.
They're not Retribution anymore.
Why are they now?
They're just Mason T-Bar.
Yeah, they're a shitter version. It's like the reason that they are that way doesn't exist anymore. So now they're just like lads in face paint for no reason.
Which one is not Gokovich?
Mace,
he's not him.
Yes.
Okay, he's class. I love him. He's got a great look. He looks like a superstar.
He does look
you know
cool.
He's the old Raw commentator, yeah.
What?
He used to commentate on Raw. Do you not remember Brock Lesnar put him through a table?
No.
And he was never
It was a very brief run, to be fair.
It was.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Well, I think he's great. I think he's like charisma out the barrel.
Don't get me wrong, I understand what you're saying about his look. Like, if you get rid of like the face paint and shit, like, I can kind of see it. But like,
if you get rid of everything they are, and suit them back into
like,
raw potential, then yes.
They appeal to my like I read like a lot of young adult fantasy books, you know what I mean? Like post-apocalyptic wasteland, and like they fit into that like.
Dude. What you're doing right now is what we were slagging people for doing with the ship being sent. You're like, there's so much meaning to this.
T-Bar taps into the dark side of my soul.
That's what you're doing right now.
No, I just think they look cool. I just think they look like they belong on the set of the Warriors.
It's the
or
symbolism. No, but it's gas. I was actually going to say, like, the one thing I didn't like about like Mustafa and Mansoor is that like. They're out here scrapping with like T-Bar and Mace and all that. They lost this week, didn't they?
Yeah. If they lost to the Viking Raiders, then you'd be like, fair enough.
But they lost to them because Ali sacrificed himself to get Mansoor out of the way.
True.
You know what I mean? Like it's
that's
a burden.
Nice.
Yeah, like that's what I love about it. Like they did have this really cool spot where they both hit like Where they both hit like double dives, and then like Ali looked at him and gave him kind of like a nod of like, no, like, oh, that was actually like pretty class. And then Mansoor was going to get bet up, and Ali sacrificed himself to save Mansoor. Like,
just good about that though as well, is that's slowly going to be a way to turn Mustafa Ali into a face again.
But this is what they're doing.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
this
like.
Is like a less funny version of Tiny McTag Team.
Yeah.
The bad guy is slowly like gaining affection for this guy that he just kind of disdained a bit at the start.
Yeah.
And he's like now like the sacrifice that actually happened in Tiny
yeah.
McTag Team.
Like he feels like a responsibility towards him now, and
yeah.
like a little bit of like, oh, if I'm here, fine, I'll save you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just think it's really nice that they're doing it like slow burning enough that like I'm invested week to week.
They're also
like
both really good as well. So
yeah.
I feel like they could go on to like put on like great matches and all that. Like
yeah, like who's not to say they could work up to like be tag team champions? Like they could be a fresh
almost.
Injection. Like
almost will squash them like
yeah.
bugs. But it'd be a good match though.
Mansoor pinning almost. Just imagine. Like,
oh, that
match.
Actually, there is a story to be told there.
And then imagine the pride Ali will have. Like it just be so good. It's just lovely. All right.
I've made a super nice reference there, by the way. Like anyone who knows it will appreciate it. But Tiny McTag Team, Justine and Darren Carney.
Of course.
You.
I just accept.
We all know.
We all accept the pro wrestling also reference as like. If you listen to Low Blows, I think you know pro wrestling also.
One of my team just started listening to the show, and like they didn't follow Peter.
They well did.
They can on the Low Blows video. There you go. The history of PW. In at number two, let's talk about the Gorgeous from SmackDown. Also with this.
Oh man, yeah. So there was a how to start again? Sorry, I forget. Bianca Belair was in
yes.
the ring, and she was getting hopped on by Zelina Vega, Carmella. And then out came Sasha Banks to the rescue and saved her and had a tag match. And then Bianca and Sasha won and they're mates again. But then Sasha Banks betrayed Bianca Belair in the same night. And now they're enemies. And presumably at SummerSlam we're going to get Bianca and Sasha too. And am I right in saying that Sasha hasn't been seen since WrestleMania?
Yeah.
Deadly! Right. Because I wasn't asked going back to check.
Thank God!
And I was like, right, if they had a match at Backlash that I forgot about, then my entire point is fucked. So, like, the fact that she hasn't seen WrestleMania is entirely my point. This is excellent, right? First of all, like, I wasn't really big into... Like, I think, like, the SmackDown Women's Division is very thin.
Yeah.
But, so, like, there'd be matches like Carmella against Zelina Vega, or Carmella against Bianca, or... You know, like Zelina Vega against Bianca or whatever it may be. I wasn't really overly into Bianca.
Liv Morgan, that's about it.
Yeah, like I haven't really been into it personally. But going into this, we've got Sasha Banks versus Bianca Belair 2, a rematch of what we got at WrestleMania. And this is what they need to do more often. And, like, I fucking hate, or I've gone around before about championship contenders matches, I won't do it again. But, like, I also hate, like, direct rematches. You know what I mean? Like, if, like, Drew McIntyre fights Lashley, right, and loses. We don't need to see that rematch like done again the following month or the month, like, because there's not going to be a fucking title change, you know what I mean? And even if there is, that's shite, like, you know what I mean? And the thing is, you have so many wrestlers on your roster now. It would have been quite an ass one to do it with the SmackDown Women's Division, but if they've done it with the SmackDown Women's Division, they do it anywhere. If Drew McIntyre, if you feel like you've got nothing for him besides a rematch, then just take him off TV after his big loss, you know what I mean? There's so many wrestlers. Like, a main event, you've got Angel Garza, Humberto Carrillo, Cedric Alexander, you know what I mean, Ricochet, all these types of people that are on main event. So what you could do is, you know, elevate somebody from like the next tier down up to the main event spot, and then elevate somebody from main event onto Raw. You know what I mean? And that way, like, you can easily get like through several months without Drew McIntyre, or I'm just using him as an example.
Yeah.
Or whoever the person is in this case who you feel the need should have, like, you feel the need to put in the same match over and over again, rematches constantly, you know what I mean? And the one thing I love about it more than anything else is not like, it's just the unpredictability factor now, you know what I mean? Like, if this match happened on Backlash, I'd be like, yeah, good match, but Bianca's obviously winning, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
whereas
yeah.
going into SummerSlam, I'm like, I actually don't know. I think Bianca's going to win, but that's a prediction in a match that can go either way.
Yeah.
And it's a great match as well. It's a fucking banging match, you know what I mean? So, like, I can't wait to watch this. This is going to be fucking great, and I genuinely don't know which way it's going to go.
Mm.
So I think they need to do more of this more often. Give wrestlers a few months away. You know what I mean? And if you want to do a championship rematch, do it months down the line, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Or just don't do it. I think this is a really, and again, like, the fact that they can do it with SmackDown Women's Division means they can do it with any division, you know what I mean? So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to seeing how it goes.
Do you know what I loved about this segment though? And no, there's two segments. I love the execution of it. It was done, and it was the little things, and it was how it was done, and it was thought through, okay? So, like, when they came down, like, and Sasha made the save, like, first off, you hear Sasha's music, it gets an instant pop, big star feeling, she comes back, gets that pop, babyface reaction, you're like, things are getting big on SmackDown again. And then she saves Bianca, and you're like, what? They lost her? And then you're like, okay, well, I suppose they bonded, being the first, like, you know, main event WrestleMania together and stuff like that. Okay, well, yeah, sure, why not? And then, like, she picks Bianca up afterwards, but really quickly hugs her. Do you know what I mean? And Bianca's face was kind of confused, but, like, it was in a really subtle way, because the hug was very forced and awkward and quick, and Bianca was selling anyway, so you're like, Bianca, like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, I think Bianca's supposed to be confused, which means they're probably turning on each other, but also, I don't know. Like, I don't know if Bianca just wasn't expecting that and that was just her natural face, like, it just landed that way, because it happened so quickly. But later then, the way they did the turn at the end of the show was so smoothly done, do you know what I mean? Because it was like, she won, they held it up straight away, and, like, not a beat pass, and Sasha just was a backcracker on it, and it's like, boom, holy shit, like, that happened so quickly. Like, I probably could have guessed that that was going to happen, but I wasn't predicting it happening there. You know what I mean? And it was really, really nicely done. I'm a massive fan of this, can't wait. Also, as well, like, we need, like, this is something that's just kind of, I think, is worth discussing. Do you guys think Bianca's been a good champion?
I haven't enjoyed her title run, but I think she's had fuck all challengers to really do anything exciting with. So I haven't really, I'll be rooting for her at SummerSlam because I want to see more from her. You know what I mean? I feel like we didn't really get much.
I don't think Bianca works as a champion. I think Bianca is one of those people who, it's like Daniel Bryan a little bit, you know what I mean? When Daniel Bryan's a babyface and does yes and he's building up to it and you want to see him win the belt, you know? And then he gets the belt and it's just like, yeah, alright, well done. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, that's fine. Like, I don't know what to do because I think she comes across as a bit of a sellout at times when she's a champion. She comes out and she does her entrance and she's dancing and she's happy and she's like, I'm the face of the company. And I don't think that suits her character. Her character is kind of a rebel.
She needs to be more vicious, like.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. I did get... But I also...
See her at the rap festival last week?
No.
Like, it was bad, man. It was real. Did you see it on Virgin Media?
Was this the one
they cut that out of Virgin Media.
Was this the one where they had, like, matches in a ring on a, like, massive stage? Like, I did not know what... Because I was kind of skipping through it, and I was like, what is happening here?
I was very confused.
I got no context. I don't know why they were there. The arena's gone.
The reason why they're there, you know what I mean? Like, because he's a famous rapper and, like, he's a big WWE fan and stuff, and he's connected. He's mates with Peter Rosenberg and stuff like that, and he'll get WWE into these cool places. So, like, he thought, like, why don't we... Like, it was clear what happened. He went to WWE and he's like, what if we had a thing at a festival? Do you know what I mean? And they're like, mainstream coverage, don't mind if I do. So they devoted, like, a course of SmackDown to it.
But it was like... The Chad Gable portion. It's such a random, like, imagine, like, you're gonna see your favorite rapper and you're like getting out the front of the stage, like, let's go, and like Otis comes out and you're like, right. I'm a wrestling fan and I'd kind of be like I'm not unhappy, but it's just a bit like I'm not like buzzing, you know what I mean? Sorry, this is random.
and then, like, they had Bianca against Carmella in, like, the rematch of the women's title. Do you know what I mean?
They wrestled a lot.
And people didn't know who they were, and she came out and she's dancing and she's doing the swinging her, like, thing around and then smacking her arse a couple of times, and that little entrance, and it just came across as like, I don't like any of this. This is not good. You're not seeming cool here. You're seeming like you have a little, like, Blue's Clues routine. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not cool. Like,
all right, is it like Blue's Clues or is it not cool? Which why exactly are you getting that here?
It's like when Eric Bischoff used to do the WCW shows at the biker rallies.
Yes,
it would just be like a sea of bewildered bikers. What the fuck is this? Yeah. And they're on their bikes and they've literally just pulled up. It's like a drive-in wrestling show and they're like, what the fuck is this shit? Like,
Luke Barry, like the former Marion Armstrong, tweeted me when I tweeted about this and he made a great comparison. It's like Irish Rip Wrestling at a tractor festival where there's a bunch of farmers who's like, I just came to see tractors. And that's what it was. It was a really bad look. So Sasha winning might be a bad thing is what I'm saying here. Like, so yeah, it makes it unpredictable. In number one anyway, I feel like I ragged on it, but it's one of these things where there's ups and downs. But like, one thing that you can always say about AEW is that there's always stuff happening. And it feels like a company with a lot of momentum. And there's like, they've done what you'd kind of want companies to do in the pandemic, I feel. They've planned a lot of different things, you know what I mean? And also, like, things have broken in certain ways that have worked in their benefit. Like, Adam Cole running out of contract, Bray Wyatt getting sacked, you know what I mean? So now, there's just so much stuff happening constantly. We mentioned it earlier on. They as good as confirmed CM Punk. They're like, yeah, CM Punk's coming. Darby Allin did a promo backstage where they talked about AEW. Well, no, what happened was Tony Schiavone did an announcement on the stage, and he's like, we're doing AEW Rampage debuts next Friday and on the 13th, and then on the 20th we're coming to Chicago. And then like they cut to a backstage promo with Darby Allin, who's like, yeah, I want to fight anyone, I'll even fight someone who's the best in the world. Looks at the camera, winks, and says, see ya.
I want to fight CM Punk. I mean, best in the world, yeah. Delivered it to perfection.
But they just confirmed that as well, which just kind of gave it a momentum. There was other little things as well, like it felt big, but like not even like in terms of superstars, just they were like flexing constantly. Like they had Lance Archer's first defense in New Japan US Championship was against Hikuleo, who's like, he's not a big New Japan name. And if you're talking about people who don't deserve title shots, like, this guy's a jobber. Like, he did not deserve an AEW Dynamite title shot. But he's US based and he's a New Japan wrestler, and the reason that they had him was revealed because then Haku is his dad, and King Haku came out with him and like got a pop. It was just like, again, these kind of throwaway cameos that AEW constantly gives their fans made it feel big. But then they had like John Moxley, like, so they had that happen, and then Archer got the win as expected, and then like they also had Tanahashi. John Moxley cut a promo where he's like, here's the thing, I lost my belt, but here's the thing, I haven't been able to get over. Like, he made a comparison to the Olympics, actually, it was. He goes, I'm watching the Olympics last night, and I'm watching the fucking Switzerland water polo team in Tokyo, and I can't get over, even though I'm the New Japan US champion.
Swiss water polo team getting buried over here.
you did. John Moxley shoots on the Switzerland. So he's like, I want to get real competition. And then later on, Hiroshi Tanahashi showed up on the screen and said that the US Championship he's won, is a belt that he's never held in New Jersey. It's the only major the heavyweight belt he's never held, so he wants to fight Lance Archer at New Japan's upcoming Resurgence show, which is based in the US, with John Moxley, and also I think Eddie Kingston are going to be on as well. But the reason I'm putting number one was, like, it's one of these shows where there's a lot going on again. But for me, it peaked at the start. The 10-man tag. It was the Dark Order against the Elite. Fantastic, fantastic. So I'm getting a lot of conversation going, especially particularly around the result. But I like that, and I'll explain why, okay? Stipulation is, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, if the Dark Order win, Hangman Page gets Kenny Omega 1-on-1 for the belt, and the Dark Orders get a tag team title shot at the Young Bucks. It's going to be a 10-man tag, Survivor Series elimination style, and it kicked off. It was a hot way to kick off. Again, as you're watching it, you're like, this match is so big, because this is Hangman and Kenny Omega getting their hands on each other, like kind of the Rock Austin of AEW, do you know what I mean? And like when they like get physical, it should be special because they've kept them apart for so long and they have this amazing backstory. So to put it as the opener, but then like kind of they had what is a cowboy intro for Hangman. Did I just get a chance to see this?
No, the
entrances.
Yes.
Yeah.
The cowboy entrance was fantastic, just for building up like kind of making the crowd geeked out. It was just like a Sean, it's like, it felt like, you remember we'd be in the stadium and they'd have a Sean Ryan video package, and the energy that you came after you watched it, you're like, give me all the wrestling, and then his music hit. but they did like a remix of it, and it was a real cool like cowboy remix of it, and then all the Dark Order came out and you're like, this is a hot start. But then the Elite come out, and they come out and they're like dressed real weird. Now that's not strange for the Young Bucks, they are getting more and more obnoxious every week, but they're dressed like weird and they're carrying basketballs for some reason. And there's a tie-in, because if you've heard, like, kind of, and you haven't got this, Justin Roberts' entrance for Kenny Omega, where, like, every week he'll come up with a way to kind of be like, blah, 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 North Carolina! That's a tribute to Michael Jordan, which Kenny Omega has been doing since The Last Dance last year. And he's got nothing to do with North Carolina. He just likes that entrance. So, like, that's the way where he's like, you can watch a supercut of this. It's really funny, like, the way he tags it in. It's like, this person lives 4,244 miles from North Carolina! And you're like, right, they're paying that off by having Kenny Omega. But then all of a sudden, like, the music kind of stops, and then it goes, and then to get ready for this, and they just start like doing a basketball routine, and then you notice their t-shirts are the Elite Squad, and it's a Space Jam ad, and you're like, holy shit, this is fucking hilarious. BTE basically did an entire episode which is about this entrance. They did 20 minutes on the entrance and like a minute on the really important match to happen. But the match itself was absolutely fantastic. Like, they got creative with it, they had a lot of fun, they brought the basketball into it quite a lot. Like, at one stage they did an alley-oop indie driver, where like the indie driver is where they're holding them in the tombstone, and then someone does a springboard flip off the top rope to push them in. But while they're doing that, they have a basketball in their hands, so they do a springboard to the outside, pot the bat, like fucking do a dunk on the basketball, and then come down and do the indie taker. It was amazing. Then eventually it came down to 3-1 against Hangman. That old kind of Survivor Series chestnut, and you're like, oh man, like it's Omega and the Young Bucks, and it's like, this is cool. It's gonna be deadly. I'm gonna be really into it when Hangman wins, because he's gonna come back from 3-1 down. But man, this is a bit much. Like, this is the world champion and the tag team champions. It's a lot to come back from. So of course he starts fighting. They're doing near falls. They're getting this, that, the other. And then like eventually Hangman manages to take out, I think, Matt Jackson, down to 2-1. Holy shit, what's gonna happen? Then they end up hitting their finish on him. Then Kenny Omega hits a big fucking move. 1-2, Hangman kicks out. It's like, holy, like, it's because they did that Survivor Series thing where they all hit their finish on him. And it's like 1-2 kicks out. You're right in the mix then. And then you're like, okay, what's gonna happen? How's he gonna come back from this? It's 2-on-1 and the ref is just letting the action go. This is proper, they're just doing a beat down on him. Kenny Omega picks up Hangman, hits him with the one-winged angel. You're like, he's gonna kick out the one-winged angel. He's gonna kick, no one ever kicks out the one-winged angel. 1-2-3, Hangman's not getting the shot. It was all a massive fucking fake out.
I mean, just sort of like, oh yeah, you could lose, yeah.
As fans shit themselves, they were angry. But this is one of these things where it's like, when fans are angry, it's like, are they angry because of shit, or are they angry because they're getting worked? And this is one where they're getting worked, because it's like, this is genius. Because then kind of like afterwards you start like going on Twitter and you start seeing, yeah, Hangman has a child due like in the next couple of months. Like, he's one of wrestling's baby boomers. You know what I mean? Katie's just like, relate.
There's a lot of pandemic babies going around.
Yeah, he's one of them. So like, he's got a baby due around All In. So like, now it's going back to, do you remember I was like, oh, Christian is probably going to fight Kenny Omega, but they're going to do the Matt Hardy thing first. And like, because they kind of set that up, but then they left it, and I'm like, oh, they're gonna go with Hangman, and they're actually like, they're just working us every week. I think it's probably gonna be Christian now, but who the fuck knows? Not even Dave Meltzer knows. He's just kind of like, Christian, I guess. Like, I don't know what they're gonna go with. But also as well, like, if you think this is the end, it's not. Like,
no, it is. He's already shot.
Like, Hangman is the person that's taking the belt off Kenny Omega, and I don't mind, like, because he's probably going to go away now for a few months, like, and then come back and have a big, like, kind of, you know, Rumble style comeback, whatever that works in AEW. But like, also now, if Omega is like the guy to, if Omega does hold on to it and they don't give it to Christian and All In, or All Out, sorry, like, what you have there is Omega could enter the G1 as the champion, like, because they have the New Japan link now. He could, like, wrestle on Wrestle Kingdom as the champion. They could do champ versus champ. They could do some kind of tie-in. Now, if he's holding onto the belt, like, a lot longer, because I think kind of the Hangman thing felt like it was coming very quickly, but it also felt, with the crowd reactions to him, unstoppable. So I love the fact that they've spread this out, because I like the long storylines. I want us to be there and ready. Can you sound like you're not happy?
See, obviously he was having a kid, there's nothing I can really do about that. But for me, I'm not as excited, because it's like, you know that no matter what, like, Omega vs. Christian is, like, doesn't appeal to me even slightly, because there's literally, like, I know it's wrestling, I know I've said this before, but there's a 0% chance Christian's winning. You know what I mean? Like, there's a zero, like, he's not losing title until Hangman gets it. So every match that he has is just going to be kind of like, all right, you know what I mean? Kind of like, it'll be cool. Obviously, it's Kenny Omega. I'm sure matches will be bangers, but, like, you know what the result's going to be, though. You know what I mean?
Okay, so you say that.
Yeah.
But also, like, up until last Wednesday, you would have said Hangman's winning and they're fighting it all out.
Yeah.
No. So, like, they can have you convinced that something is going to happen this way and then it doesn't. And also, as well, like, what I'd say in AEW's defense is give them a chance for Christian. They haven't, like, I'm just guessing that he's the next challenger. They haven't even started selling you yet. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, he's still undefeated. It's still kind of, I feel like that's where
he's lost to Jungle Boy.
What?
He lost in the Double or Nothing. That's why he didn't get the title. That's why Jungle Boy got the title.
No, I mean in singles competition, like pins and losses and shit like that. But, like, regardless of whether it's Christian, my point is, no matter who it is, you know that Omega's going to win, though. You know what I mean? Like, you've just said it there. Like, who do you think? Like, do you think anybody? Now, maybe Punk, maybe. But even then, I'm kind of like, I still don't think, like, you know what I mean? I don't know. We'll see, though. It is
Daniel Bryan?
No, I don't see it.
Adam Cole?
I don't see any people winning it before Hangman. That's the thing.
Like, but also as well, like, this is why I'm saying give them the benefit of the doubt. Because
those matches are all bangers, actually.
We went into Double or Nothing and we're like, Christian's winning the Casino Battle Royale, and then Jungle Boy won. We're like, God, Danny! You know what I mean? And then, like, the very match we're talking about, we're like, Hangman's definitely winning. That's what's happening. And he lost. AEW are good at doing a swerve title. You know what I mean? So we're saying that Hangman's probably going to win, but, like, if you rule it out, you're gonna be sitting there and Omega's going to lose the belt and you're going to be like, oh, fuck.
That'd be even better. Yeah, it's just about wrestling, is that once you have that what if, I suppose it doesn't really matter. Like,
yeah,
you can kind of talk yourself in. Like, when it's the new names that you mentioned there that would have me going, I'd still consider Omega the heavy favourite, but it's the names that you mentioned, the new names, you know what I mean? Where you're like, oh, well, this completely, like, changes everything. You're not going
to
wait.
Give yourself the benefit of the doubt. Give AEW the benefit of the doubt to give yourself that what if, is what I'd say. Because they are proving that they will do unpredictable stuff here. In this very match, they will go left. And it's not a guarantee. They can have Hangman win 2 years from now against someone else. They can have Omega lose the belt, win it back, and then have Hangman beat him. Do you know what I mean? They can stretch this thing out for years, man.
I don't think they will.
But I agree that that's the most likely course of events. But also, up until this time last week, I literally was on this show in this spot saying, it's a Hangman's game.
But you know why? But you know why as well? I wanted Omega Hangman, because I remember you said it like the other week, and I agreed with it. There was no guarantee that Hangman was winning the first match.
Yeah.
And I feel like if you had that match first and get that out of the way, then I feel like the door would be open to more possibilities before Hangman return. I that's just what I think. But yeah. I don't know. It's interesting though.
Let's just play it out. I think like in a few weeks, like, you could be turning around going, Christian's gonna win in here, boy. Guys, really exciting times, really exciting couple of weeks coming up. We're going to have a week in a few weeks where we're going to have, like, CM Punk debuting for AEW on Friday, SummerSlam on Saturday, TakeOver Sunday. So, amazing few weeks coming up. Next week, we've got the debut of AEW Rampage, which I might as well announce here. We're going to be doing a draft on next week's show. Now, what that means, you have to tune in next week to find out, but we're going to be doing a draft on next week's show. Times we shook things up a little
it's
bit.
It's not the fantasy
here.
Wrestling game.
We're not doing that draft. Like, it is something that actually impacts the show and the way you guys hear it and stuff like that. So we'll talk about that next week, and we'll talk about whatever else the wrestling world decides to throw. It's throwing a fucking lot at us, lady. But in the meantime, we'll be back this Friday for Asshole Blows. But until then, for Corporate King, for Katie Harvey, I've been Rick Nash, and that's the bottom line. Because my boss said so.